Support for this broadcast comes from Tiny and Sons Glass, presenting sponsor of the Talking Information Center's Starry Night Gala. A family-owned business serving the South Shore for over 40 years, Tiny and Sons Glass is known for expert auto glass repair, trusted service, and a strong commitment to the community. We thank Tiny and Sons Glass for supporting the Talking Information Center. To learn more about the Starry Night Gala, visit www.ticnetwork.org.
And we now begin the reading of today's Wall Street Journal on the Talking Information Center. Today is Tuesday, the 7th of April, 2026, and we say hello with the Wall Street Journal to Billy.
Thank you, John, and good morning, listeners. Our top story, Saudi Arabia's grand vision slams into a harsh reality. Budget shortfalls in practical designs and now war in Iran set back ambitions. This was written by Stephen Collin, Elliot Brown, and Summer Said. Vast development sites around Riyadh trumpets images of a shiny new future for Saudi Arabia, part of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's Grandiose Vision 2030 agenda to turn the petrostate into an international hub of trade, technology, and culture. Appeals for investment are sprinkled on ubiquitous construction fencing, along with English language catchphrases such as redefining livability and an extraordinary new normal. Mohammed's vision extended to a pledge to invest up to $1 trillion in the U.S. during a landmark visit to the White House in November, earning him praise from President Trump. The warm embrace was a signal that the de facto Saudi leader, once shunned in the West, was fully rehabilitated on the world stage. Yet those extraordinary plans are slamming into reality. Over the past year, the world's largest oil exporter began pulling back on many of its promised projects and investments, met with budget shortfalls and unrealistic designs. And now the U.S. and Israeli war with Iran has plunged Mohammed's sweeping vision deeper into jeopardy. Iran's closure of the Strait of Hormuz has limited Saudi oil exports to about half their normal capacity. Their kingdom has shut down most of its offshore fields and this week stopped operating one of the world's largest petrochemical plants. Hundreds of Iranian drones and ballistic missiles launched at Saudi Arabia have hurt its image as a safe place for investors and visitors, even though most were intercepted. Major events have been canceled, including an F1 race, a capital markets forum, and a flag football event featuring Tom Brady. On Thursday, major U.S. companies operating in Riyadh told their staff to work from home for the next few days, and some large office towers and business parks, including the King Abdullah Financial District, temporarily closed the following Iranian threats against U.S. firms. The war has already cost Saudi Arabia more than $10 billion in lost revenues and expenses, people familiar with the matter say. The Saudi government didn't respond to requests for comment. Nearly every mega project unveiled as part of Vision 2030 is now under review, a process that predates the war, people familiar with the matter say. Officials are also reconsidering the size of U.S. investment pledged last year, the people said. At NEOM, the planned futuristic city that called for two 1,600-foot skyscrapers running 106 miles, officials have already been quietly ratcheting back plans, leaving a gapping 75-mile trench across the desert. Nome recently canceled major construction contracts at a $38 billion luxury mountain project meant to be the first outdoor ski resort in the Gulf. Coming after years of work, it raises the prospect that enormous partially built structures will be simply abandoned. NEOM did not respond to requests for comment. In Riyadh, construction crews in recent months parked their backhoes at the quarter-mile-wide pit where the world's largest building, a gargantuan cube that could hold 20 Empire State Buildings, was supposed to be built. Budget squeeze. The $1 trillion Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, the public investment fund, yanked back spending and hiring in numerous areas and sold much of its U.S. stock portfolio even before the war. In December, PIF pleaded with the wealthy families, fund managers, and local businesses to pump more money into Saudi products. People familiar with the matter said the government departments were told to tighten their belts, reduce travel, and stay in cheaper hotels abroad. PIF Governor Yasir al-Rumayyan said at a conference in Miami at the end of March that Saudi macroeconomic position remains strong, stable, and resilient, and PIF's portfolio is well diversified and structurally resilient. We are a long-term patient investor. Even if a ceasefire is eventually reached, Saudi officials worry the eventual outcome will be an Iran that's wounded yet still dominated by hardline regime that controls the Strait of Hormuz. That could lead Saudi Arabia under a cloud of uncertainty, potentially for years to come, repelling foreign investors it has increasingly been counting on for its transformation. It would also be likely to force Riyadh to spend billions of dollars to bolster defenses and bail out already limping projects, further straining a budget that's faced growing deficits. Everything now is in the air. Chris Johnson, an American lawyer based in Riyadh who helps foreign companies doing business there, said 4 weeks into the war, Mohammed is walking a thin line. He has quietly urged Washington to keep the war going until Iran's ability to project power has been degraded, the Wall Street Journal has reported. But he also doesn't want the war to engulf more energy infrastructure. Officially, the government says it supports a peaceful resolution. Saudi officials say they are still progressing towards a bigger and more well-rounded economy beyond oil, and that even accomplishing a portion of Vision 2030 will be a success. The country has undergone tremendous change in the past decade as reforms have helped create a burgeoning private sector, loosened ultra-conservative social structures, and tackled rampant corruption. The country isn't afraid to cancel some projects if they don't make sense, Finance Minister Mohammed Al-Jadan said late last year. If we announce something and we need to adjust it, accelerate it, and make it a priority more than others, or defer or cancel it, we will without blinking, he said. The recent sharp rise in oil prices could help restore some lost revenue. Saudi Arabia is still exporting large volumes through a pipeline that carries oil to Red Sea, bypassing Hormuz. The Crown Prince's vision hinges on using oil wealth and foreign investment to jumpstart new economic sectors, from tourism to mining to data centers, before the world transitions to renewable energy. The problem is there was never enough cash to fund all of his ambitious initiatives. They included a new airline with about $20 billion in planes on order, investments in esports and video game companies totaling $38 billion, a new theme park city with the world's tallest roller coaster at a total cost of $32 billion, a collection of 30 Maldives-style resorts in the Red Sea, with $10 billion already spent and a $100 billion AI push. A major expansion of Riyadh's airport is supposed to accumulate or accommodate up to 120 million travelers by 2030, from 37 million in 2024. Commitments towards infrastructure to host a World Expo in 2030 and the World Cup in 2034 are expected to cost $26 billion, according to International Monetary Fund. The Crown Prince was personally involved with many projects, particularly NEOM. Told that he liked architecture that looked like it defied gravity, NEOM staff set up architectural models costing millions of dollars in a tent multiple times a year so that Mohammed and other officials could choose their favorite designs as they strolled by, former NEOM employees said. The country's project ran into the trillions of dollars, far more than a government with a $300 billion annual budget could afford. Wasted caviar. The rubber met the road at the line, the horizontal mirror skyscraper city the prince conjured for NEOM. In early 2025, staff said they were preparing to start vertical construction on the first chunk of the structure by year's end, having spent billions of dollars on what NEOM described as the world's largest excavation effort for a pit 1.5 miles wide and 150 feet deep. By last fall, work on the line all but halted as the PIF appeared to shelve the project, former employees say. Winds are slowly blowing sand into the 75-mile trench meant to hold a bullet train, while once bustling worker camps have turned to ghost towns, one former employee said. A similar scene unfolded in Sindala, a $4 billion ultra-luxury island resort project at NEOM, an October 2024 launch party with Will Smith and Alicia Keys proved premature as rushed work left hotels riddled with construction problems and unable to open without hundreds of millions of dollars of fixes. Last spring, NEOM mothballed the island while staff at numerous fancy restaurants loaded bar carrots, crystal glasses, and blue crocodile skin chairs into storage, former employees said. Restaurants discarded over 50 pounds of beluga caviar, likely worth tens of thousands of dollars, one said. In Riyadh, workers dug out a square pit with widths of 4 football fields meant to hold the gargantuan cube, intended to be about 70 stories tall, that would anchor a new Riyadh downtown called New Maraba, with a price tag topping $50 billion. While some surrounding development may go ahead, the cube is stalled, with hopes for funding pushed years back into the future, officials say. New Maraba said in a statement that its development was progressing in line with a phased and disciplinary delivery approach, with excavation and foundation activity well advanced. Some lower-cost efforts have shown success. Domestic tourism and entertainment spending have increased as movie theaters and amusement parks once banned have sprouted across the country. The Riyadh Metro, which opened 6 lines in late 2024 after years of delays and billions of dollars of cost overruns, is regularly packed at rush hour, Millions of women have joined the workforce, surpassing 2030 targets. The non-oil part of the economy has grown more than half of gross domestic products. Setbacks posed a threat to Mohammed's wider goals of making Saudi Arabia and himself the leader of a new Middle East. For decades, Saudi Arabia played an outsized role thanks to its vast oil production and its special status in Islam as home to the holy cities of Mecca and Medina. But the kingdom watched its influence ebb as neighbors, especially the United Arab Emirates and Qatar, raced ahead in attracting international investors. Mohammed promised a reimagination of the kingdom's place in the world. Once a relatively obscure royal, he outmaneuvered older cousins and purged rivals to become heir apparent as the health of his father, King Salman, declined. He called his Vision 2030 plan, rolled out 10 years ago, ambitious yet achievable. He accompanied the push with reforms meant to modernize Saudi society, defanging religious police, and ending a ban on female drivers. He impetuously, however, seriously alarmed the West. He launched a war in Yemen that went badly and imprisoned dissidents. In 2018, men in his employ murdered Jamal Khashoggi, a Saudi journalist who criticized the government. Although Mohammed denied personal involvement, the CIA concluded that he likely ordered the killing. Western leaders and investors largely shunned the prince. They started to relent in 2022 after Russia's invasion of Ukraine sparked a global energy crunch. Trump's re-election brought a pro-Saudi leader back into the White House. Mohammed also sought to mend fences with Iran after earlier calling its leader the new Hitler and accusing Tehran of trying to encircle Saudi Arabia with hostile militias in 2032. He restored diplomatic relations with Iran after a seven-year break. In an interview soon after, he said the transformation of Saudi Arabia required a stable region, including economic development in Iran. Foreign doubts. Foreign investments have never come close to reaching the level Mohammed needed to fully enact his Vision 2030. Big U.S. companies such as Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and PwC have opened regional headquarters in Riyadh after the government threatened to cut them off from contracts otherwise. But foreign investment only reached $35.5 billion in 2025, according to official figures, up from previous years, but well short of the 2030 goal of $100 billion. Saudi Arabia's debt load soared to nearly $400 billion, while still quite conservative compared to the West's states at 32% of GDP, it was well above the 12% level seen a decade ago. In October, Investment Minister Khalid Al-Fali told a Riyadh financial conference that the private sector needed to take a larger role. "It is time for us to maybe scale back on this government or PIF spending and to let the private sector come in and start investing," said the minister, who was later replaced. The call went out again as drones attacks spread. "We want to bring the whole world to come and invest in Saudi," said Al-Rumayyan, the PIF governor at the Miami conference. "Stay tuned," he said. Updates planned for Saudi Arabia's future growth will be revealed soon. And over to our next article, workers opt to retire amid shift to AI. This was written by Lauren Weber and Ray A. Smith. Luke Michael, has already lived through two technology overhauls in his career. First, desktop publishing in the 1980s, and online publishing later on. But AI? He's had enough. So when his employer, the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, made an early retirement offer to some staff last year, the 68-year-old content strategist decided to speed up his exit before he expected to work on a couple of more years. The time and energy you have to devote to learning a whole new vocabulary and a whole new skill set, it wasn't worth it, he said. It isn't that he's shunning AI. He's learning Spanish with the help of Anthropotics Claude. But at this point, he's less than eager to endure all the ways that technology promises to upend work. I just want to use it for my own purposes and not someone else's, he said. After rising for decades and then hovering around 40% in the 2010s, the shares of Americans over age 55 and in the workforce has slipped to 37.2%, the lowest level in more than 20 years. The financial cushion of rising home equity and stock market returns is driving some of the decline, economists and retirement advisors said. But for some older professionals, money is only part of the equation. They said they don't want to spend the last years of their career going through the tumult of AI adoption, which has brought new tools, new expectations, and a lot of uncertainty. Many people retire when key elements of their work lives are disrupted at once, said Robert Laura, co-founder of the Retirement Coaches Association and an expert on the psychology of retirement. Maybe their autonomy is being challenged or changed. Their friends are leaving the workplace or they disagree with the company's direction, he said. When two or three of these things show up, that's when people start to opt out. AI is a big one, he said. It disrupts their autonomy, their professionalism. Michael, whose work required overseeing and strategizing on website content, has been here before. When desktop publishing arrived in the 1980s, he was a graphic designer using triangles and rubber cement. The internet's arrival changed everything again. Both developments required new skills, and he was energized by the challenge of learning alongside colleagues and peers. It felt different this time around. Your battery doesn't hold a charge as long as it used to, he said. He rather spent his energy volunteering, making art, going to operas, and chairing the Council on Aging in North Andover, Mass., where he lives. An AARP survey of 5,000 people age 50 and older last summer, 25% of those who planned to retire sooner than expected counted work stress and burnout as factors. About half of those retired as they had left work, at least partly because they had the financial security to do so. In general, older Americans are less likely than younger counterparts to use AI, research shows. About 30% of people from 30 to 49 said they use ChatGPT on the job, nearly double the share of those 50 and older. A 2025 Pew Research Center survey of more than 5,000 adults said baby boomers and members of Generation X also experienced the sharpest declines in confidence using AI technology, according to a Manpower Group survey of more than 13,900 workers in 19 countries. We, as employers, aren't doing a good enough job saying to older workers, we value the skills that you already have, so much so that we want to invest in you to help you do your job better, said Becky Frankowicz, Manpower Group's chief strategy officer. Jennifer Kern's misgivings about AI contributed to her departure last month from GitHub, where the 60-year-old worked as a program manager. Coming from a family of artists, she said, it offends her that AI models train on the creative work of people who aren't compensated for their intellectual property. And she worries about AI's efforts on people's critical thinking skills. So she was dismayed when GitHub, a Microsoft-owned hosting service for software projects, began investing heavily in AI products and expecting employees to incorporate AI into much of their work. In employee engagement surveys, the company had begun asking them to rate their AI usage on a scale of 1 to 5. When it came time to write reports and reviews, colleagues would suggest she use ChatGPT. I'd be like, I have no idea how to use that, and I have no interest in using AI to write anything for me, she said. It would have been more prudent to work until she was closer to Medicare eligibility, she said. But by waiting until her kids were out of college and some of her stock grants had vested, the math worked. Her first act as a non-working person, a solo trip to Scotland where she took a darning workshop and learned how to repair sweaters. The opposite of AI, she said. Employers already under pressure to cut workers, such as in the tech industry, might welcome some of these retirements, said Gad Levanon, chief economist at Burning Glass Institute, where studies labor market data. The more people retire, the fewer they have to let go, he said. Some of the savviest tech users are also balking at sticking around for the AI upheaval. Terry Grimm, who worked in IT for 40 years, retired from his senior software consultant role at 65 last May. His firm had just acquired by a bigger firm, which meant learning and integrating the parent company's AI and other tech tools into his work. Until then, Grimm expected he might work for a few more years, though he felt he probably had enough to retire. I just got to the point where I was spending 40 hours at work and then 20 hours training and studying, said Grimm, who has since moved with his wife from the Dallas area to a housing development on a golf course in El Dorado, Arkansas. I'm like, I'll let the younger guys do this. And over to the next article, Medicare insurers to get major bump. This was written by Anna Wild Matthews. The Trump administration will raise payments to Medicare insurers by 2.48% next year, a dramatic increase after a preliminary proposal holding the line on payments drew fierce criticism from the industry and torpedoed shares of the largest companies. The final 2027 rates for Medicare Advantage, the private insurer version of the federal program for seniors and the disabled, came in above some analysis expectations. Several had suggested a rate increase would likely be finalized at around 1% or slightly higher, with a bull case closer to 2% to 3%. The final increase represents about $13 billion in additional payments to the insurers. The announcement marks a stunning turnaround for an industry that has been battered by a series of financial setbacks across multiple lines of business, particularly in the Medicare plans that had long been a major engine of growth. The January proposal would have been held roughly flat, and the new wipes out about $100 billion in the market capitalization for the largest insurers. Investors reacted quickly to what many saw as a signal of future support for Medicare Advantage from the Trump administration. Shares of United Health rose nearly 9% after hour training, while Evolent Health was up 8%. Humana increased 12%, and CVS Health, which owns Aetna, was up 8%. Chris Klump, the Medicare program director, said in an interview with the Wall Street Journal that the Centers for Medicare and the Medicaid Services is trying to balance the interests of enrollees and taxpayers. "We have to be wise stewards of the tax dollar," said Klump, who is also now a top official at the Department of Health and Human Services. "But we need to make sure that plans aren't pulling out of markets, that they're not cutting benefits that beneficiaries are relying on. Trends in Medicare plans billing will raise the overall 2027 payment increase to 4.98% with the final rate changes added in," the agency said. The Better Medicare Alliance, an industry-backed lobbying group, said the final rates were an improvement over the proposal, and we look forward to working with policymakers to build on this progress. The 2027 final rates were boosted by several factors, including a slightly higher growth estimate for the underlying cost of health care, which is used to help calculate insurer payments. The final rates were also bolstered by the Trump administration's decision to delay a recalibration of the system that ties insurer payments to the health of enrollees, rather than finalizing a change in 2027. The move will reassure investors that CMS is willing to tweak policies that draw strong pushback from the industry. Klump said that the agency was worried about the risk of Medicare insurers pulling out of markets, disruption to healthcare providers that work with insurers, and the risk of cutbacks to Medicare plans' benefits. Molly T. Turco, a healthcare policy analyst at TD Cowen Washington Research Group, said the punting of the recalibration sends a signal that the administration was swayed by industry lobbying or concerns about Medicare beneficiary impacts before the midterm elections, which will be seen as a positive signal by investors. Insurers waged an extensive lobbying campaign to push up the final rates, warning that seniors would face higher costs and stingier benefits if federal payments weren't adequate. The insurers argued to CMS that the rates were based on underestimates of healthcare spending trending and that the proposed recalibration distorted the payment setups. In the final rates, the Medicare agency also stuck to its decision to eliminate a lucrative industry billing practice that has raised concerns with the government watchdogs and was among the tactics examined in reporting by the Journal on Medicare Insurers. The change means insurers can no longer use certain medical charts reviews to document diagnoses for their enrollees. Payments in the Medicare Advantage program go up when patients have particular medical conditions. Under the rule, insurers won't get paid for medical charge-derived diagnoses that aren't linked to a specific medical service, such as a doctor's visit. Klump said industry billing practices related to documenting enrollees' diagnosis should not be a source of competitive advantage, and it most certainly should not be a source of insurers' margin or market share. We are hoping to send that signal loud and clear to the market right now. And over to our next article. Astronauts set space travel record. Artemis 2 breaks Apollo 13's milestone for distance, transit behind the moon. This was written by Micah Maidenberg. The Artemis astronauts have gone the distance, the longest in human history, in fact. Just before 2 p.m. EDT Monday, the astronauts on NASA Artemis II lunar mission rode their Orion craft into the record books, flying more than 248,655 miles from Earth. That surpassed the milestone NASA's Apollo 13 mission set in 1970. We most importantly chose this moment to challenge this generation and the next to make sure this record is not long-lived, said Jeremy Hansen, the Artemis astronaut representing the Canadian Space Agency. Monday was one of the most consequential periods for the Artemis second mission, which has proceeded with only minor glitches so far. Earlier in the day, Orion entered a point where the gravity of the moon was exerting a stronger pull on the spacecraft than the Earth, setting up the crew, Reed Weissman, Christina Koch, Victor Glover, and Hansen, for the kind of lunar flyby the National Aeronautics and Space Administration hasn't attempted in decades. On Monday evening, Orion transitioned behind the moon, where the crew lost communications with Earth for 40 minutes or so. During that time, the ship reached its maximum distance from the planet during the mission. 252,756 miles away. It is so great to hear from Earth again, Koch said to Mission Control at the Johnson Space Center around 7:30 p.m. ET, confirming communications were back. Besides setting a distance record for human spaceflight, the Artemis has been gearing up to make the most of the time they spend swooping around the moon. That means meticulously photographing and observing the lunar surface. We are looking for the crew to take time during their flyby, let their eyes adjust to what they are seeing, and call out any of those subtle color nuances, especially on parts on the far side that have never been seen by human eyes. Kelsey Young, the top lunar science official, said for the mission on Saturday. Mission controllers sent the crew a list of 30 targets to track the lunar surface. Among them is a 3.8 billion-year-old crater called Oriental Basin. Young said the crew trained extensively for the flyby, including a trip to Iceland to work on describing geological features. The crew also proposed naming two craters on the moon as they approach it, saying they would like to call one Integrity after the name of their ship. They suggested calling another one Carol after Wiseman's late wife. There are islands of terrain out there that are completely surrounded by darkness, which indicates some real variation in terrain, Glover said on one NASA's mission live stream as the crew prepared to circle around the far side of the moon. Glover, a naval aviator who joined NASA's astronaut corps in 2013, at one point observed a double crater on the lunar surface that he said resembled a snowman. A few issues cropped up on Orion over the past couple of days, including an unusual smell of the spacecraft. It wasn't clear what was causing the odor, NASA's officials said, which may have emerged from a mechanical system or materials like tapes on board. And over to our next article. California warns firms on health care. This was written by Chris Cummings. California's top law enforcement official sent an ominous message to private equity firms as the state starts to implement a new law banning corporate influence in medicine. California Attorney General Rob Bonta last week advocated erecting a strict barrier between corporate investors, such as private equity firms, and the medical practices they back. In a court filing, he cited research showing investments from buyout firms degrade healthcare providers' quality of care. Bonta took aim at an arrangement known as the friendly physician model, which is commonly used in private equity healthcare deals. Bonta said California's recently enacted law governing corporate medicine, which took effect January 1st, forbade private equity or other investors from making hiring or firing decisions at medical providers they invest in. As private equity investment in healthcare grows, we must reaffirm our commitment to California's prohibition on the corporate practice of medicine and ensure our patients remain our top priority, Bonta said April 1st. His office didn't reply to a request for more detail on his views. Bonta aired his opinion in an amicus brief filed in California's Second District Court of Appeals, and he intervened in a case between physicians who owned a medical practice and a private equity-backed group named WCE that allegedly tried to terminate their contract. Backed by private equity firm BC Partners, WCE is a management services organization, or MSO, a type of company that handles a medical practice's back office and business operations in exchange for a fee. In the friendly physician model, the MSO contracts with a physician who is the nominal office of the practice, but gives up control of some decisions to the MSO. Critics say private equity firms often use investments in MSOs to circumvent bans on corporate interference in healthcare. A total court found that WCE had violated the state's prohibition on corporate medicine. Bonta intervened in the case not to support either party, but to emphasize his view that the court made the right call. When a corporation, including an MSO, makes employment decisions, the corporation is the entity with true control over the medical practice, and the physician owner has no meaningful autonomy, Bonta wrote. London-based BC Partners declined to comment. WCE didn't respond to an inquiry. Bonta's opinion may have little influence on the result of the case at hand. The appeals court isn't obligated to follow his line of reasoning, but the opinion is significant because it suggests how California regulators may seek to implement the new ban on corporate medicine, which Governor Gavin Newsom, a Democrat, signed last year. California is the largest market for private equity investment overall, according to the trade group the American Investment Council. The state is also one of the largest markets for private equity healthcare investment, with $20 billion invested in 2021 alone, according to a 2024 study. State authorities have yet to provide guidance on how they intend to enforce the new law banning private equity influence over medical providers, said John Saran, a partner at law firm Holland & Knight. But if it follows Bonta's position, California would have the broadest prohibition on corporate medicine in the country, Saran said. Healthcare investing has become more complex for private equity in recent years as more states seek to restrict the industry's activities in the medical sector. Chris Cummins also writes for WSJ Pro Private Equity. And we move over to our next article. Robinhood, BNY to run Trump accounts. Wall Street firms have been vying to score a coveted role in the program. This was written by Alicia Ebling and Jack Pitcher. Bank of New York Mellon and Robinhood are the early winners in Wall Street's race to play a role in setting up and running Trump accounts, a new savings tool for children created under last year's tax law. The Treasury Department announced Monday that it has designated BNY as a financial agent to manage the initial accounts. The bank is working with Robinhood Markets to tap its design and technology expertise to develop a Trump account app and provide customer service, the department said. Our task is clear, to provide the next generation of Americans with a world-class intuitive platform to jumpstart their financial future, said Vlad Tenev, Robinhood's chairman and chief executive. The app will be a custom white-label product for Treasury, meaning it won't have BNY or Robinhood branding. Financial terms of the contract weren't disclosed. Wall Street firms have been angling for a role in the program since it was announced, in part because the accounts are a potential gateway for acquiring customers for life. Many of the biggest banks, brokerage, and asset managers had planned to pitch their services to the Treasury Department, the Wall Street Journal has reported. BNY's relationship with Treasury dates to the 18th century, which it provided the federal government with its first loan. BNY Chief Executive Robin Vince said Trump's account will give more children a foundation for long-term financial security. Tens of millions of children are eligible for the accounts, which can grow tax-deferred for decades. All children with a Social Security number can have an account, but only those born between 2025 and 2028 who are U.S. citizens and have a Social Security number are eligible for $1,000 in seed money from the federal government. So far, more than 4 million children have been signed up, with about a quarter of them eligible for the $1,000 funding, according to Treasury. Treasury said it would retain control over the app and operations for these initial accounts. But within a year, people will be able to roll over the accounts to other financial institutions. That could help those who would want to consolidate their accounts at one brokerage and open the door to different investment lineups. The accounts would still have to follow the Trump account rules. Companies would have to track where contributions come from for tax purposes. There are also dollar limits on contributions and rules regarding distributions. Employers and charities can make contributions too. Parents can register children now and elect the $1,000 seed money at TrumpAccounts.gov or by filing Form 4547 when they file their taxes. These are custodial accounts so that the custodian, typically a parent, would make decisions around rollovers and investments on behalf of the child. The accounts have to be invested in index funds of mostly U.S. stocks until age 18, when children generally can first take distributions. Funds must have an expense ratio of 0.1% or less. In the year the child turns 18, the account starts following tax rules for individual retirement accounts. Over to our next article as it loads up. Justice lets Bannon seek case dismissal. This was written by Lydia Wheeler and C. Ryan Barber. The Supreme Court on Monday paved the way for a lower court to erase the criminal conviction of President Trump's longtime advisor, Steve Bannon. Bannon served a four-month prison sentence after he was convicted in 2022 on two counts of contempt of Congress for defying a subpoena from a House Select Committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol and Trump's efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. After a federal appeals court upheld his conviction, Bannon petitioned the Supreme Court to overturn it rather than taking up his case. The High Court vacated the appeals court's ruling and sent it back to the lower courts. The Supreme Court cited the Trump administration's decisions not to defend the conviction. The court's two-sentence order came after the justices' regular closed-door conference, which was held on Thursday. The federal government had filed a brief supporting Bannon's request to have his conviction tossed out. In that briefing, Solicitor General D. John Saucer said the government had determined in its prosecutional discretion that dismissal of this criminal case is in the interest of justice. The Justice Department cited similar reasoning in a motion to file with the trial court earlier this year, seeking to dismiss the charges against Bannon. Bannon, who had invoked executive privilege in refusing to testify before the committee, argued his conviction should be overturned because he was following his lawyer's advice when he refused to comply with the House subpoena seeking his testimony and documents. Bannon relied in good faith on his attorney's advice to delay compliance with a subpoena issued by a House Select Committee until executive privilege disputes were first resolved, his attorney said in his brief filed with the Supreme Court. The D.C. Court of Appeals said in its decision that Bannon didn't dispute that he had deliberately refused to comply with the committee's subpoena, and federal law requires contempt of Congress to be willful for there to be a conviction. The court said Bannon's advice of counsel's defense is no defense at all. And over to our next article. From the World News, Iran's ailing economy is a critical target. Oh, hold on 1 second. I will come back to that page in just a bit. Here we go. Iran's ailing economy is a critical target. U.S.-Israel ramp-up key industry raids ahead of plans to hit energy installations. This was written by Dov Lieber and Z. Smith. From Tel Aviv, the U.S. and Israel have a set of targets in Iran they are hitting with the goals of crippling the country's economy. Israel is awaiting authorization from Washington to begin striking Iran's energy facilities, an Israeli official said. In a Wall Street Journal interview, President Trump said Sunday the U.S. was prepared to hit all of Iran's bridges and power plants, creating enough damage that it would take 20 years to rebuild if they are lucky, if they have a country. Striking the underpinnings of Iran's economy would mark an escalation in war. If conducted, the strikes would aim to force Tehran to give up the economic leverage it has gained by slowing traffic through the Strait of Hormuz, the waterway through which 20% of the world's oil flows. Trump has set a deadline of Tuesday for the strait to be opened. Israel and the U.S. has begun stepping up attacks on non-energy targets in recent days, including hitting steel and petrochemical factories and a landmark bridge. They are signaling, we are serious, and if you continue not to agree to end the war, the price you'll pay to your economy is going to be higher and higher, said Avner Golov, a former Israeli national security official and now vice president of Mind Israel, an advisory group. Attacking civilian infrastructural risks, violating international law, U.S. and Israeli officials have said that they are legitimate targets because they produce material used by Iran's military. The shift towards infrastructural targets risks turning the conflict into a war of economic attrition. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps said it would step up attacks on civilian infrastructure in Israel and the Persian Gulf states should Trump carry out his threats. It has retaliated for earlier attacks by hitting petrochemical facilities in Bahrain and Abu Dhabi and striking oil desalination and power infrastructures in Kuwait. On Sunday, Iran hit the Nuwat Haviv industrial zone in southern Israel days earlier. Israel's largest oil refinery in Haifa was hit by debris from an Iranian missile but didn't halt production, Israeli officials said. Your reckless moves are dragging the United States into a living hell for every single family in our whole region is going to burn because you insist on following Netanyahu's commands. Iran's preliminary speaker, Mohammed Bagher Ghalibaf, wrote on Sunday on X after Trump's threats. Mediators are trying to bring Iran to the negotiating table with the U.S. without success, officials familiar with the matter said. Iran has rejected offers to open the Strait of Hormuz in exchange for a temporary ceasefire. Even if Iran gives up control of the strait, nothing will be able to get out of the Gulf if petrochemical and if other energy facilities are damaged, said Robin Mills. The chief executive of Kamar Energy, a Dubai-based consulting firm. Even if we get back to normal transit, some of that 5 million barrels a day of refined materials sourced from the Gulf of Mexico will be lost for months, possibly even longer, Mills said. And this article continues on, but that's all the time I have for today. My name is Billy, and I've been reading you the Wall Street Journal for the Talking Information Center. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for listening.